thanks, Bartek. Okay, so as I guess introduced, my name is Simon Bohajczuk. I'm here from the Simutech Group. And what I'll be talking to you today about is the essentially commercial implementations of some design problems and our commercial or implementations of optimization software and how we actually apply it to the computational fluid dynamics problems that we work with every day at Simutech. So the quick agenda, first I'll give you an overview of who we are, what we do, give you a little bit of background of what is actually CFD and what can we solve with it. And finally, we'll talk about what we do right now in terms of optimization at work, and then what are some of the challenges involved in optimization. And then the bulk of the presentation will be actually about two example problems and comparing two different commercial codes and application to these problems. Finally, we'll hopefully draw some conclusions and observations, and we'll have some time for questions. So I'm from the Simutech Group. We've got over 72 employees in North America, 14 offices, and 1,700 customers. We focus on FEA and CFD simulation software, or computer-aided engineering software. Specifically, we are a channel partner to ANSYS, and ANSYS creates a suite of products for computer-aided engineering or simulation. And we offer services, both consulting services, sales of the software, sales support of the sales. We perform tech support on the software, and as well as we supplement the computer-aided engineering side with physical testing services. Okay. And our objectives are to be a technology partner, a full service provider with a strong commitment to customer satisfaction. So we try to offer a value added to our customers by trying to solve their problems any way we can. So whether that means consulting or software, anyway. Okay. So we're located all over North America. I'm from the Toronto office. The Canadian part of Simutech, which local customers know us by a different name, ROI Engineering. We're in Toronto, Montreal, and Calgary. We have centers of excellence spread around. Like, for example, in Montreal, we have Explicit Dynamics Center for Excellence. In Toronto, we tend to do a lot of things, including finite element analysis and CFD. And in Calgary, we're specializing on a lot of oil and gas industrial applications. So our partnerships involve mainly ANSYS and their line of products, but there is others as well. For example, Tosca Fluid and the Tosca Structure, both are optimization codes. There's Safe Technology for life prediction due to fatigue, as well as other things like Autodesk Moldflow and Civil FEM for industrial or civil applications. Okay. So as I mentioned briefly earlier, we cover a range of services. So we do technical support, consulting, testing, validation, training, mentoring, and other complementary software, in addition to the base of the ANSYS software sales. I myself personally do a lot of consulting. About half my time is spent on consulting projects in the Toronto area and the Calgary area. But as the other half is spent supporting the sales team at our company on selling the software, supporting our clients when they run into problems, and then also training and teaching classes as well. Okay, we cover a broad range of different industrial areas. So we do a lot of aerospace, automotive has been a pretty big one, at least in the Toronto office, especially on the CFD and fluid side. Oil and gas is an ever-growing field for us, and this is one of the reasons we're expanding into Calgary. Now, to get into sort of the meat of this presentation, I'll start off by explaining a little bit of what is computational fluid dynamics. It essentially is a way of obtaining a fluid flow solution to a given problem for some sort of arbitrary but predefined geometry. So whether it be an external aerodynamics problem, internal aerodynamics, we have some sort of geometry. We want to solve for the flow through it, around it, and get some sort of solution, okay? We also, in CFD, there's also model extensions that allow for things like multi-phase flow, rotating machinery, multiple reference frames, and so on, okay? Now, CFD is commonly an implicit and iterative numerical method, okay, where transport equations, known as the Navier-Stokes equations, are solved over millions of control volumes. At least with the software we're dealing with, we're using the finite volume method, where laws of concentration of mass, energy, momentum are enforced through these control volumes by taking the balance of fluxes and also looking at the gradients through these discrete volumes. Okay, and the code that we're mostly using, at least the code that will be presented here, is ANSYS CFX revision 13, service pack 2. Now, how does this apply to optimization? Right now, you know, at Simutech and actually in a lot of our customers, we do things by hand. We do a lot of essentially manual optimization. We rely heavily on engineers' intuition, which for the most part works because, you know, we went through school, we have the degrees, you know, hopefully we know a little bit about what we're doing. So we do this, we solve problems, we get some sort of baseline design, and at least, you know, in simulation we will simulate the problem, get a solution, analyze post-process, pull out the data that we need from it, so we will get, and you know, values like in this presentation I'll be talking about drag and on a vehicle and so on. And then we start to make design decisions. So we start to look at it, we start to interrogate the solution, try to understand why certain things are happening, we change the design, and repeat, okay? Now, this is a costly process. It involves a lot of engineers' time, which is expensive. So we're starting to evaluate processes to see if there's ways to do optimization that are more automated, and whether these optimization tools and that exist out there can be incorporated into our current workflow. Okay, so one of the things, main considerations in optimizing a CFD problem, and this is an overarching theme that you're going to see throughout the entire presentation. And, well, that's exactly, that's a good question, because one of the things is, you know, when is good enough, right? Exactly. Very often, time is actually a constraint. So in other words, a customer needs to have a certain product by a certain time. Sometimes it's a matter of whether the product becomes better than the competitor's product, okay? So depending on, you know, sort of what the driving factor, they need to bring a certain cost down, right, below a certain value to be competitive. Ultimately, it usually boils down to either time or money, right? And as we improve products, you know, often even an incremental improvement becomes sufficient, right? Okay. At a certain point, you start to get diminishing returns, so we just don't bother. And you're going to actually see that, and I'll get into that a little bit when I start talking about the drag on a car. You're going to see that, you know, we had a essentially good enough much sooner than a full sort of optimal solution. Okay. But one of these overarching themes that you're going to see is that CFD already in itself is an iterative method that takes a long time, okay? Not only do we have to monitor, you know, residuals of as we're solving our numerical set of equations, you know, there's sub-iterations on top of those iterations and so on. It's a very lengthy process, okay? So one of the things is we have to make sure we can optimize in as little time as possible, okay? The other issues you're going to see is parametrization of the geometry. I mentioned earlier that we're working with arbitrary geometry. Not everything can be turned into an optimization problem, okay? And, of course, the discretization or meshing of our geometry to be able to perform a computational fluid dynamics CFD analysis, the optimization needs to take that into account, okay? So the two commercial codes that I'm going to be evaluating are the Red Cedar's HEED, it's called MDO, Multidisciplinary Optimization, and ANSYS Design Explorer, okay? So HEED's MDO uses a proprietary search algorithm called SHERPA, okay? Stands for Simultaneous Hybrid Exploration of that is robust, progressive, and adaptive, okay? It's a proprietary algorithm that was developed in the University of Michigan, and the spin-off from the university project became essentially a commercial code, okay? Ansys Design Explorer is also a tool for performing optimization. It's built into our software, Ansys, but it's based on a design response surface approach for optimization rather than a search algorithm. Okay. Now, the reason we picked these two codes is because both codes, they interface with the Ansys. Yep. Oh, I don't know that detail. I don't know. Yeah, I've only dealt with them on the commercial side, so, okay. I know that, okay, so the reason we picked both these codes is because they both interface with our Ansys tools, okay? Design Explorer is actually built into the tool, to the Workbench directly. It's inside of Workbench, Ansys Workbench. But HEADS, on the other hand, has a plugin which interfaces as well, okay? So both of them are very easy to connect up with the software that we'll be using to model our fluid problem. Okay. So what's the purpose and limitation of the comparison study? Okay. So we're using this to determine the feasibility of using different tools to perform optimization. We're assuming here average analyst's knowledge. Okay. So a lot of us, you know, we're engineers. We've been trained in fluid dynamics, structural mechanics. And on top of that, we've built an expertise in computational fluid dynamics, finite element method. It's not always reasonable to expect that a user will understand optimization down to the mathematics, right? So what this implies? This implies that often we're going to be using default settings. It implies that, you know, there'll be limited sensitivity playing, you know, in the codes and so on, okay? Also, limited engineering project timelines, prohibit the exploration of different settings and studies. So we need to be able to use the code almost out of the box, okay? Now, that's not to say we can't, you know, with time, with expertise, we can't start to divert from that. But from the start, both for our own interest and the interest of our own customers, we want to be able to get something rolling as quickly as possible, okay? So that implies also that we're looking for robustness and speed with which we can get an optimized problem, okay? And you're going to see the comparisons, okay? Now, the first model that I'm going to present to you is essentially a car body. It's a very simple car body, which is placed in a virtual wind tunnel, okay? Now, you can picture this box now. This is actually the virtual wind tunnel with half symmetry, and you can see the body of the car, okay, with the flow coming in this direction from the lower right corner, okay? Now, this is based on a concept of something known as an Ahmed body, which is a universally accepted shape that's studied in CFD to study drag on vehicles. Now, I've modified it, took some liberties to make it a more interesting optimization problem, okay? And first thing I had to do is create the geometry, and this is where one of the first difficulties comes in optimization and CFDs. You have to make sure your geometry can be parametrized, okay? So we have to make sure that, you know, the parameters such as, for example, the height of the vehicle, the angles at the different faces, you know, the height, you know, above the ground and so on, that all these geometric parameters, if we start to change them, that our geometry stays consistent. So our vehicle remains a vehicle. So when we look at our CAD model, our drawing, that it, you know, if we change a parameter, that the whole model doesn't collapse into a plane, you know? It's something as simple as that, but you really have to start to pay attention to that when developing a model that's going to be optimized, okay? So one of the things you also have to watch out for is small gaps, slivers forming, geometric slivers, okay, which will create problems for the meshing in CFD analysis later downstream, okay? You have to watch for proper model constraints. So again, so if you don't change one dimension, the model doesn't blow up on you and, you know, geometry will be lost. The next thing is, once you have the geometry, is to look at the mesh, okay? We have to discretize the problem to solve it. Now, the quality of the mesh is very important to the accuracy of the solution. As you can see here, we've got refinement near the vehicle, so we've got the finer mesh close to the body of the vehicle. But as you start to change and parameterize models, that's going to work the mesh, okay? So the mesh is going to change. Not only that, but the mesh will often be regenerated, okay? So when we're creating a problem while thinking about it that this has to be optimized, we have to anticipate the fact that the geometry may change so much that the mesh elements will start to collapse, that they're going to start to deform to the point that they're such poor quality that, you know, we can't rely on the results. So this is something that has to be considered. Not only that, but the size of the mesh. So the discretization, in this case, I only had 300,000 control volumes, okay? And this problem, as you're going to see in a little bit, took about, you know, 24 hours to solve and get a, you know, let's say optimized solution, okay? What happens when this value explodes? And we'll touch on that. But this is something that has to be kept in mind when defining a problem, fluid flow problem, okay? Now, before we optimize the problem, we have to make sure that the simulation works, okay? So we have to first verify that the simulations converge and that they finish cleanly by themselves. What that means is that the simulation has to essentially run on autopilot. It has to be, you have to be able to take a geometry mesh solution, and the whole process has to be able to, in the software, run on its own without any engineer's intervention or analyst's intervention, okay? We call this an automatic update. So we have to be able to obtain an automatic update on the geometry without any failure in the solver. Okay? So convergence has to be monitored. Anytime you have a numerical set of equations and you're solving, things may diverge. The thing with CFD is we always monitor convergence, and as you change certain geometric parameters, you start to get certain flow features, like, for example, vortex shedding, where the flow oscillates back and forth. There's no way to obtain a steady-state solution to such a problem, and all of a sudden you've got divergence. So you have to take that into account if you're going to be optimizing a fluid problem, because the software, which is doing this automatically, will not know this for you. Okay? How do I do it? Well, usually what I do is I actually generate the model at its extremes for the different parameters and just do two or three tests. Okay? That's one. The other thing is, in general, if we have a situation that arose that where you have oscillation, that's chances are not an optimal solution anyways, okay? And often we will exactly set up the problem that if it won't converge, that the optimizing code will disregard that solution, okay? So at least that's how I handled it in this situation, okay? So the next step, once we've tested and verified that our simulation works, it converges, you know, it makes sense, okay? We start to do the design of experiment stage where we allow the software to generate design points which will allow for an optimization. Now, what I'm starting with is the response surface approach built into Workbench. So I'm using Design Explorer inside of ANSYS. And the design space is filled using 54 points using the design of experiments algorithm. Okay, it's a space-filling design. The actual default schemes in Design Explorer had only 30 design points to generate the response surface. I actually don't present the results here, but I actually, as soon as we ran 30 points and got a response surface, the response surface was very unrepresentative of our actual design space. And we were actually having problems where we predicted an optimal solution from the response surface, and when we ran verification tests to see whether actually that's our optimal solution, we were way off, like the simulation didn't match at all. So, you know, I told one of the things I said earlier is that, you know, we want to assume average knowledge. You know, right away we have to start to depart from default settings, even though we're trying to stick to the default settings. Okay, so we did an enhanced algorithm that generated 54 points, and you can start to see now the parallel chart that shows the different design variables. Now, I should mention, I guess this is pretty fundamental, is that here we're minimizing drag, okay, using five different input variables, okay? So the five input variables were the car roundness, so how rounded all the edges are. There was front-end blend, which is how rounded the front is, so how streamlined the front is. There was wheel position, so how far back and how far forward the car is with respect to the wheels. There was rear draft angle, which is the angle of the back hatch of the car. And finally, ground clearance, the height of the car above the ground. Okay. So as you can see, that the space-filling design of experiments generated, a set of simulations which covered everything evenly. And as you'll notice, that the evaluations after our simulation was done of drag, we're spending a lot of time generating values of drag that are sort of halfway nowhere to, you know, not bad, not good. But we're not actually spending a lot of time simulating optimal designs. Okay? Now, that's to be expected because the design of experiments generates the design points before we actually start, generating the response surface. Okay? But, you know, it's something to note, and you'll see that as we compare it to the other software. So here are the response surfaces that Design Explorer generated. We've got the front blend and the car roundness with respect to drag, very simple response surface. I mean, it's pretty obvious that as you increase the car roundness, as it becomes more streamlined, you start to move towards a more optimal solution. The same thing over here is that, you know, as you change, for example, the ground clearance, as you drop the car height, you can notice that the drag drops. But then you start to get some interesting things with the rear draft angle. So as you change the angle of the back, you start to get, you know, minimums that are actually interesting, and this makes it a more interesting design problem. So once again, this is now our solution, one of our solutions for a baseline design. So what we have here is flow direction coming from right to the left, so the car is traveling to the right. And you'll notice a couple of features in the flow, like for example the wake, okay, the region of high pressure in the front of the vehicle, also high pressure that's, you know, near the wheels, and any sort of boundary layer effects happening underneath the car. Okay, these are all the things that are influencing our design. Okay, and these are the reasons why our response surface was starting to get interesting, at least on the rear draft angle, which is this right here. Okay. Because one of the things you're going to see in a sec, let me go to that. Okay, so I'm showing an example of a really bad design compared to the baseline. You know, if you change this draft angle too much, you've got this giant, it forms a giant wake behind the car, which creates lots of drag. Okay, if this angle becomes very shallow, it has the same effect. You're going to essentially have as if there was no chamfer there, as if it was a straight box like this. Again, you have a giant wake. You're creating a lot of drag, okay? So when you start to compare it that way, you see why the response surface looks the way it does. And this is always something as engineers we have to do whenever we're doing simulation, is because mistakes can be made along the way. There's numerical errors, there's input errors, boundary condition errors, all kinds of things. We have to make sure that things make sense. Also, you can see here on the pressure side, this is pressure on the vehicle. You know, with this really bad design, very small front-end blend, you've got this giant high-pressure region out in the front of the vehicle. As you start to round it off, this pressure region starts to drop. You start to get better drag. So again, sanity check, something that needs to be done fairly often. Okay. So now we asked Design Explorer to take our response surface and find an optimal solution. So we specified our objective functions. Pretty much there was only one, and that was to minimize drag. Okay, we gave it high importance. This would only matter really if we had multiple objectives, but we said it anyways. And then we got a couple of solutions, three different candidates. The first one predicted a drag of 69, then 70, and 72, so they were ordered. Now the original drag, I think, was something on the order of 120 for the baseline design. So we got to a decent design, and we started running verifications. So we got 76, 77, and 77, or close to 78. So as you can see, the drag is a bit higher than the response surface predicted. And this is the error that I was talking about, that if we had fewer than these 54 variables, this discrepancy between the candidate and the verification simulation starts to get out of control. As a matter of fact, this value at 30 design points was closer to the drag was off by almost 20 newtons, right? Right now it's, you know, around 5, okay? So it's not too bad. So this is how Design Explorer performs. For a lot of, you know, for all intents and purposes, it did find a much better design, but we wanted to see how it compares to something like a search algorithm, like the Sherpa method offered by Heeds. So this is the Heeds interface, nothing to really speak of, but it's actually very straightforward to use. Once you set up your input and output variables, you make the connection to the software we were using, which was Ansys Workbench. You tell Heeds which parameters that Heeds is aware of, and what does it correspond to inside of our actual simulation, so that the two codes can talk to each other. And then we just specify the algorithm. Red Cedar, the makers of Heat, they recommend always using Sherpa, because it is an algorithm that essentially adapts and changes, you know, and the methodologies that it uses as it goes on change depending on what the design space is looking like. They do offer other things like genetic algorithms and response surfaces, but they claim that it's essentially only for academic purposes, so that, you know, if you're interested to see how they compare, they can be there, right? The other thing is that a lot of companies have established processes in place already. So if you want to bring a software like this into a company that always uses genetic algorithms, well, you better have an option for them to do it so that they can verify the validity of your code, okay? So there's, you know, so there's a lot of options, but they claim that Sherpa is the best, so that's what we went with. And you can see this parallel plot. So this is the same thing as I was showing you with Design Explorer earlier, but you'll notice that the space, design space is not filled nice and evenly. It is now, it was an iterative method, so it solved one, and as it solved, it started to find better solutions. You can see how much time it spent creating solutions near our optimal design, okay? But the question now remains is how many iterations it actually took to find a design, right? We've already established it took 54 on the to do using the designers the response surface approach. So this is our response history in Heeds, and you can see that almost immediately we started to drop, you know, where we had pretty significant improvements in drag, and by, let's say, you know, conservatively 30 and 40 iterations, we were at a drag levels that were essentially better than Design Explorers, okay? And the more we ran, the better the solution got. And at this point, the search algorithm is looking for better solutions, but it doesn't want to also get stuck in the local, a possible local minima. So you can see that from time to time, it departs from the original, from what it thinks is the design, to make sure that it covers more ground, okay? But either way, at this point, we found that, okay, 30 to 40 iterations is sufficient. So what's our optimal design? Well, you're looking at it here. As you can see, you've got a nice streamlined front. We've got some sort of optimal angle here that creates the smallest wake behind the cars possible, and the car is as low as it can go. Okay. Same with pressure. You can see a very small high pressure region in front of the car, minimizing the wind resistance, as well as good pressure recovery in the back, so you don't have a big wake that creates problems. So we went from, you know, baseline design to something a lot more streamlined. But I don't know about you, but I don't know how many people would want to drive something like this anyways, you know? So let me relate this to you to something a little bit more real, okay? We've had the opportunity to work on a real car, some of you may recognize it, for Toyota. And you'll notice, essentially, they came to us and they wanted to see how it performs under different configurations. You'll see, you know, different wheels, there's a skirt kit, and so on, okay? So the question arises now, is this problem suitable for optimization, okay? And when you start to look at the problem, one of the things you'll find is that the surface geometry that's provided to you needs to be processed, cleaned up. And I mean, just in a project like this, you can use up to 4 different codes just to clean up the geometry: space claim, design model, CAD fix, ISIM. Okay, so we're spending a lot of manual time fixing the geometry. Then we have to mesh it with manual operations in advanced meshing tools like ISIM. If you take a look at this mesh, it looks quite different from the one you saw on the simple model. Okay, so we're spending a lot of manual time on this operation. So a simulation like this, unfortunately, doesn't lend itself to at least parametric optimization because of the fact, the limitations of how we can process CAD, how we can create these meshes. Okay, so this is where, you know, an engineer and their intuition and their skills still are required for an optimization of a, you know, real problem. Okay. Not only that, but you know, we've now established that an optimization for this car took about 40 design iterations. Okay, and that process for that simple car took roughly 24 hours. Okay, and that was on a simple 300,000 node mesh. Okay? That car I just showed you before, and many problems like him, I mean, we're that's representative of a lot of simulations we've done. We're getting closer to 10 million cells, okay? So to optimize something like this, okay, and assuming the same number of design variables that we had, you know, so we had 5 design variables and 1 goal, right? It would take 30 days to optimize, okay? Now, what happens in real life also is we don't just have 1 goal, right? We want to minimize drag, okay? But we can't do it at the cost of passenger space. We can't do it at the cost of cost to the vehicle, right? So more often than not, we have a multidisciplinary optimization, which would likely bring this value up, okay? So this is where, we have to really think about which problems we optimize and how we can actually approach optimization problems. And with something like a vehicle, we might actually consider doing it simplifications like representing things in 2 dimensions or simplifying the shape of the car, so working with only the general configuration and trying to get certain angles, or even modeling only certain parts of the car and optimizing only, say, like, so the mirrors of the car, right? So we have to think of that, okay? So here's another example that we worked through just to verify our findings and also, you know, again, compare software. Created something, we call it the simple carburetor. What it is, you know, essentially a pipe split in half with half symmetry with a venturi in the center and some sort of injector pipe in the center, okay? And we had 2 input parameters in this problem. One is the injector protrusion, how far this tube penetrates into the flow, as well as venturi diameter, which is the diameter of this neck section of the pipe, okay? In this problem, the mesh was even smaller. Instead of 300,000 nodes, we had 30,000 nodes, which was actually a good test because we were able to do a lot more iterations, play around with it a lot more because the whole optimization problem could be solved within a couple hours rather than a day, okay? So one of the first things I did in this case, because we had now a lot more, or we had 2 goals, 2 competing goals, and we had also 2 input parameters, is I wanted to see the sensitivity of these. So I ran a sensitivity study, which is built into the Design Explorer tool, and you can see that in terms of mixing efficiency and the pressure drop, okay, which are 2 competing goals in the simulations, we had the most sensitivity to the radius of the venturi and a little bit of sensitivity on the injector protrusion. Either way, both did have an influence in the flow. And the way it worked is that, if you can imagine, as you create a constriction in the throat, right, the higher the pressure drop would be through that section, and the better the mixing efficiency would be, right? So this is why the two were competing, but still, the constriction was the most, created the most sensitivity to the design. So then, again, like before, we created a design of experiments based response surface based on 17 design points. And you can see, again, it's, you know, evenly filled out to create a response surface. Okay, and we can see our mixing efficiencies were all over the place with somewhat decent pressure drops in all our cases that we ran. The response surfaces, as you can see, are much simpler, or at least one of them is, you know, one is just as simple. The other is a lot simpler than the previous one in the car. And it's clear from the response surfaces that there's a trade-off here, okay? That the pressure drop and mixing efficiency are competing objectives, okay? So what we have to do in that case is look at something known as the Pareto front to actually study the trade-off. And from a design, from a response surface, you know, we can get a pretty high-resolution Pareto front. Now, obviously, there's some limitations to this. This is obviously based on a interpolated values from the response surface, so we have to take it with a grain of salt. But either way, we can find, you know, a pretty high-resolution heel, and we can actually obtain results where we want them. Okay. Some images from the simulations, you'll notice for mixing efficiency, so we have flow coming in here and flow coming in here and how well they mix. So you can see in the cross section, you know, the mixing, and you can see also on the outlet of our pipe, you can see the distribution of the flow coming in from the ejector. Okay, and as this was protruding ejector was dropped lower, this distribution was becoming smoother and smoother. And same with this throat, as you constricted more, the distribution was becoming smoother and smoother. Okay, as far as pressure drop goes, as you constricted the pipe, the pressure drop increased, and as you put the protrusion of the injector further into the flow, our pressure drop increased again. So as you can see, that both of those created the same competing requirements. Now, what we're looking at here is just so you can visualize what the flow was actually doing. It was coming from the right. It would encounter the flow coming from the injector. Most of the flow would get deflected down, and then a bunch of flow would get trapped in a recirculation region. Okay, and this recirculation region would get essentially worse and worse, depending on how you constricted this throat, which was contributing to our pressure losses. Okay. So we've seen already let me just quickly go back. We've seen what the Design Explorer can do for us in terms of optimization. It gave us this Pareto front, so now an engineer can look at it and decide, okay, well, you know, really our pressure drop is a lot more important, so we want to probably sit somewhere over here, or if mixing efficiency is important, we want to be somewhere over here. But we found the optimal designs given those two criteria. That was with Design Explorer. So now, how did HEADS hold up to this problem? As you can see, there were a lot of simulations performed, and the reason for that was because now we have two input parameters and two output parameters to generate a Pareto front of decent resolution enough to be able to make decisions based on, we had to, and it was recommended by Red Cedar to run at least 160 iterations. Okay, so we had to do 160 simulations to generate decent Pareto front. We used 180 just to be a little conservative. And you can see this is what started to come out. These are all our design points that he's worked on. So it was, again, adaptively trying to run as many as possible that would lie on the Pareto front. But truly, if we filtered it by rank, so we only show rank one designs, and also filter out all the points that don't actually lie on the front, we're left with this. Okay. So after 180 iterations, we have something along the lines of this, which if we were looking for a design, you know, design somewhere here, you know, we'd have effectively two design points to pick from, and if we wanted to make sure, if we wanted somewhere thing over here, we would have to do more simulations, okay, on top of the 160 that we already have. So in a simpler problem, and that has simpler response surface, clearly Design Explorer gave us a much better, you know, optimization. And mainly quicker optimization. Okay, so it did it in, you know, an eighth of the time rather than what HEADS did. Okay, so some general observations: the HEADS Pareto front output has an advantage in that it's based on actual evaluations. So the points that we're looking on the Pareto front are real. Okay, those are the actual evaluations. Those are actual mixing efficiencies and actual pressure drops. While with Design Explorer, it's based on the response surface, so it is just an approximation. But it's able to show many more points, so it gives you more information to base your engineering decisions on. Okay. Now, one of the things we could have done to help HEADS out is constrain the problem better. Okay. We generated a big, large front. If we were looking, say, somewhere closer to the heel, we could have specified these constraints. The only problem with that is that that requires some sort of foreknowledge of the problem and what the optimal solution might be. Okay. Now, tools such as HEADS are very robust, they have great fault tolerance. So this is one of the things I mentioned, is that, you know, if there is a problem, okay, it will ignore the design point. So for example, with the car, you know, if there's certain designs which generated either an oscillating flow or something that wouldn't converge, it was able to essentially ignore. Okay, it's able to interface with many codes directly, so it's got the plugins necessary to connect to Workbench, which we were using in this study. But there's plugins for many other software, analysis software. But even if there is no plugin, HEADS can actually interface with any arbitrary code by parsing text files, so input and output files to certain codes. So the nice thing is that you're not limited to only supported code. The other thing is that it can be used with multiple codes at the same time. So you can have a multidisciplinary optimization which takes into account the structure and the stresses. It can take the fluid into account, cost Excel sheet even built into that, everything, right? So it can do all those at once, okay? And it will interface with them, okay? Now, one of the things, since we're evaluating commercial codes, we don't want to be just limited to two, so there's obviously other considerations. There's things you can do on the non-parametric optimization side. What you saw here was obviously parametric. For example, there's the Tosca fluid code. What that does is, I showed you the wake behind the car in one of the examples. What the code will automatically do is start to block off the cells where there is these wake regions, okay? So it will grow your geometry to fill these, we call them recirculation regions, okay? So it optimizes based on, you know, trying to remove wakes in the flow. There's also a HEADS non-parametric. That's another module developed by Red Cedar, except right now it only applies to FEA, finite element analysis, so stresses, deformations. It's able to only essentially minimize a mass of a structure while minimizing stress. Okay. Now, the other options we have is semi-automated optimization. So instead of, you know, setting up the problem, letting it run, and then having it go for a couple of days, stop it periodically, evaluate it from an engineering point of view, constrain the problem further, or even change the problem altogether, continue running it, and that sort of approach, this hybrid approach, might be a lot more feasible for a practical approach when there's timelines involved and so on. Okay, so that, then there's also adjoint solvers. We have a sister code to the code I used in this study, which was CFX. But the sister code Fluent has a adjoint solver, which essentially shows areas of geometry that are sensitive to the design parameter you're interested in. So it will solve gradients on surfaces, showing you, for example, lift, drag, or pressure drop, which parts of the geometry are most sensitive. Okay, and it will show you actual the magnitude of that sensitivity. The nice thing with that is once you've identified and you've solved the adjoint solution and identified the regions, Fluent does allow you to morph the geometry by a little bit and run a verification test on the geometry. And the nice thing is that this is, again, it's a non-parametric approach, so the problems I mentioned with the surfaces, the meshing, and so on, it becomes a non-issue on something like this. Okay. So, what we've learned from this, we've developed some practical approaches and tips to consider. First is to perform sensitivity analysis and eliminate as many parameters as possible. Okay. So Design Explorer has built-in tools to do that. You saw one of these plots on the sensitivity. And the reason for this is, again, is, it doesn't matter which code is faster at this point, Design Explorer or HEADS, okay? We need to get both codes to be faster, or the optimization process to be faster, okay? So we want to eliminate as many variables as possible. We want to, also simplify the geometry as possible, so to reduce the mesh size. Reducing the mesh size decreases the computation time per iteration, okay? Consider using lower order representations, so two-dimensional, and then use the full model only to validate your design. Okay. Parallelize as much as possible. Computers are cheap these days. Relatively speaking, a high-end workstation is upwards of $10,000, right? An engineer costs a lot more, to hire. So if you put a computer that can speed up the turnaround time of a project, there's a real return on investment on that, especially since a lot of these simulation codes, optimization codes, are expensive. The cost of a computer is nothing, okay, in comparison. So invest in computers, parallelize. HEADS has the capability, actually Design Explorer as well, of distributing multiple design points to many computers at once. Not only that, but a lot of these codes, the CFD codes, can parallelize each individual simulation to multiple processors. So take advantage of that. And then another thing is that most recent versions of Design Explorer, we've got adaptive response surface methods, which approximate the error between the actual design space and the response surface, and try to put more points in the areas of highest error. So that way we've got a better response surface representation, so you'll need fewer design points to get a decent surface from which you can optimize. Okay. So some concluding remarks, and we'll go to questions. So we found that HEADS appears to excel more at more and is more efficient whenever you have complicated problems with a lot of different inputs, a lot of different design variables. Okay, and Design Explorer appears to excel at simpler problems with fewer parameters, where the design the response surface is simple. Okay, but finally, again, the theme going back to it is that in general, the ability to optimize a fluid problem is greatly, at least for CFD, is greatly dependent on the complexity of the problem. So the higher the complexity, the more manual operations, intervention, and supervision is necessary, and the less feasible automated optimization becomes. And even with possible automation, higher complexity usually means prohibitively long run times. So we're still, you know, stuck sort of optimizing the simpler problems, not the ones that we truly want to simplify to get bigger, better, faster, cheaper, you know, in the end of our real products. Okay? So at this point, if you guys have any other questions, I'll be happy to address them.